Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Dan Marino.
Hi, Ryan Tannehill from the Dolphins here.
Hi, this is Larry Zonka.
This is Mark Super Duper.
I'm John Offerdahl.
This is Paul Warfield.
Hi, this is Nick Bonacani.
This is Jake Scott.
Gary Apremian.
Dick Anderson.
Larry Little.
Tom Vigorito.
Don Nottingham.
Otto Stowe.
Mike Colan.
Doug Kerzan for the 1972 undefeated Miami Dolphins.
This is Marlon the Magician Briscoe.
And Jim Crash Jensen.
This is Don Shula, and I listen to the Pat Catello Show.
It's the Miami Dolphins Legend Show with Pat Catello. Join us now as we talk Dolphin football or call in live with your questions or comments. And now here's your host, Pat Catello.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Miami Dolphins Legend Show. I'm your host, Pat Catello. I will be joined alongside Rich Van Zandt shortly. As the Miami Dolphins continue their slip slide down to 500 now, as their record evens out at 4-4 with another national night game loss, this time on Sunday night to the Raiders. And it seems like a pattern that continues with this team. 27-24. This was actually a very tough loss to swallow because it seemed like a game that the Miami Dolphins certainly had an opportunity to win and maybe should have won. And we'll break that all down. First game without Jay Ajayi as a running back for the Miami Dolphins, as the trade we talked about last week was official, and Jay Ajayi actually played for the Philadelphia Eagles this week. I think there was a little bit of change to that offense as Devontae Parker got healthy again, and Jay Cutler off his best game, a 300-yard-plus game, but still was not enough as the Miami Dolphin defense seemed to wither, and Marshawn Lynch looked like the Marshawn Lynch of Seattle, basically running upshot on the Miami Dolphins defense. Ndamukong Suh had gotten hurt, but then returned from the game. And so, you know, you're basically faced with watching this team, which I had said week in and week out, seemed to have a better record than the team really was, and now you're evened out, and you still have one more game to go. As far as a night game goes, we had the Thursday night, and then we bumped up to the Sunday night, and now we're going to have a Monday night against the Carolina Panthers next week. But before we get on to that, there's a lot to talk about in this game, as it seems like there's some dissension with the Miami Dolphins coaching staff and their front office and how it trickles down to the players. And one of the things that was basically brought out into the public was that Jarvis Landry's contract seems now to have been halted and directly affected by the signing of Jay Cutler. At least that's what the Miami Dolphin front office and Mike Tannenbaum are kind of portraying it to be. That the reason why he was told that they would renegotiate it when things were said and done, but the signing of Jay Cutler kind of put that on a halt, and now they seem like they've kind of forgotten about that. So I think we know where that's headed. It's not a good sign at all. And this team seems like they're on the brink of going, you know, two different directions. So, and I'm sure Rich has a lot to say about that. So without further ado, let me bring Rich into the program. Rich, Jay Cutler, 34 for 42, 311 yards and 3 touchdowns. And with that, you're going to say, wow, what a fantastic game Jay Cutler had, and he's back to the form of Jay Cutler, correct?
Not me. What was the average pass for? 10 yards, 8 yards, 3 yards? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously there was some in that garbage time situation which stacks onto those stats. We know that they were behind by 10 points, which we'll get into because I'm very aggravated at that. I don't think they should have been behind by 10 points. I think there was a couple factors in there that they really let this game slip away.
You know, before we really go into this, like into the game, you made one mistake. We didn't talk about Jay Ajayi. That was Tuesday morning.
I thought last show we had addressed Jay Ajayi.
No, absolutely. It seems like that because it's so long ago. No, the trade didn't happen until Tuesday. We didn't know about it when we were on the air last week, so we really have to go into that to an extent.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, if that's the case, and we must have talked about that at another – I must have talked about that
at
another venue.
Yeah, we've talked about it together, but we
didn't
talk about it on the air, you know?
Yeah, well, at least on this show I haven't. So let's go ahead and do that because, you know, my big thing, and I guess like Rich says, for anybody who's listening to the show week in and week out, the major point last week was Jay Ajayi being traded in a shocking trade at the trade deadline. And what he's basically traded for is he's traded for a fourth-round pick. And that obviously sent shockwaves through the Dolphins, the Dolphin fans. I was livid, and the reason why I was so livid is not because of Jay Ajayi himself. I just felt like they gave him away, and I still do. Now, from what I have derived from everything I've heard inside and outside, it seems to me that what basically happened was he became on Adam Gase's bad side in a hurry, and Adam Gase seems like he was the one who basically facilitated this, in the sense that I kind of get the feeling that Adam Gase is a very intellectual coach. He's got this elaborate offensive scheme, and a lot of people aren't picking it up. And he's basically called out the veterans that they should be bringing home their books and studying at night, which I find a little off, especially in this day and age in football, because I don't think you're asking players to do something that they're really not capable or it's just not in their wheelhouse, and you know you're kind of blowing into the wind by doing that. But one of the guys that he called out the most was Jay Ajayi, because he said that he was, more than anything else, he was missing his reads and blocking assignments, and that was contributing to the lack of offense and the quarterback getting shelled, and that every time he took the ball, he wasn't hitting the holes. He was basically looking for a home run each time. So that's what I think facilitated it. Now, you can take that as you will, okay, if that's the reason why. You know, we've both had some criticism of Jay Ajayi, but the problem is I feel like they gave him away. I feel like they should have, you know, maybe, like you said, benched him or what. But you drafted him for a fifth round 3 years ago, and then he turned into a superstar, if you will. Three 200-yard games, only, what, three, four players ever did that in the history of the NFL, and you get a fourth-round pick for him? Sounds ridiculous. That's my steam on it. What say you, Rich?
Well, you're also getting a fourth-round pick from right now the best team in football, so it's going to be a real lousy fourth-round pick. Basically, it's like a fifth-round pick, if you think about it. Because the Eagles could win the Super Bowl this year. It could be the last pick in the fourth round. So it's a horrendous fourth round pick.
It's basically what you get for him.
Bench him. You don't give him away. You either bench him, get him in line. He's under his rookie contract for another year still. And if you're gonna trade him, you gotta get at least a two.
At least, you saw the game
he had yesterday. He could be the NFC Player of the Week this week.
Yeah,
he had a
47-yard
touchdown pass run. You know, he played great yesterday.
And that's basically what you got him for.
Listen to me. Here's the bottom line. Good teams don't make moves like this.
No. You're right. They don't. And the front office of this team just baffles me at times. You're basically getting for him what you have into him. And if I gave you that fifth-round pick again, or I'll even give you this fourth-round pick, you're not picking Jay Ajayi again. I don't have confidence that you are.
Absolutely not. Anyway, here's the bottom line, too. This is the second debacle trade we made with the Eagles. They got Wentz from us because the pick they got for the game, we gave them for free. We got, you know, we got two players, and we swapped first-rounders, and they took our pick and then traded that to the Browns to trade up, you know, to get Carson Wentz. Without our pick, they're not making that move.
Yeah, let's go over that a little, because we differ on this a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. Now, from what I remember, we had, what, the 12th pick in the draft?
Yes.
Okay, so if we're at 12, No, we had eight. We were at, well,
eight,
we
I'm
had
sorry.
Eight.
Yeah, we had
we,
eight,
we,
and we, yeah,
we
and
were
we traded
eight.
For 16. Yeah.
16
we went
or
down
12?
Eight spots. 16.
Are you sure
we
on that?
We went down eight spots. I'm positive. We went down eight spots.
Okay, so basically we went from 8 to 16, and you got Kiku Alonso, who I think is a very good ball player, but then we also got Maxwell, and you obviously were not into him at all, and very high salaries, you know, to boot.
Yeah,
so
well, they were going to cut anyway. They were going to salary cap dump both of them. Okay, so let's
both
not
of them,
be that's
both
so
of them?
Much we got them. We could have got them for free. Yeah, they were going to salary cap both of them. They were getting cut.
And now you wind up picking Tunzel with the pick. So I think you would have probably picked Tunzel at 8 anyway, though, correct?
Knowing them, I'm sure.
Knowing them, you probably, yeah, I think they would have. But the point is, you know, you're trading there, and you basically gave the Eagles the ammunition to get what seems to be the best quarterback taken in a little while.
Let me clarify myself. I'm not saying we would have taken Wentz, but to make that trade, you need to bring back another first rounder. You know, swap first-round picks and get another first-rounder. Nobody drops down eight spots in the first round and comes back with two players with huge salaries and nothing else. I mean, that's a ridiculous trade.
Yeah. Yeah,
those eight spots are worth a hell of a lot more than what we got.
Yeah, and I think that by doing that, you know, obviously that we talked about that a lot when it happened and in this year. And now when you see this trade, it just doesn't seem right. It seems like, you know, there's some kind of a relationship with this Philadelphia Eagles team again. Yeah,
there
which
is.
I told you.
We sniffed it out. Tannenbaum's friends with the guy who has the same position with the Eagles.
And, you know, when something like this goes down, you really have to ask yourself, I mean, how did the Miami Dolphins get better by trading Jay Ajayi for that? It certainly may be the piece that the Eagles need now, like you said, to get to a Super Bowl. I mean, they're the best team in football record-wise for sure right now, and now they're adding a Pro Bowl running back who still was on pace, as bad as the Miami Dolphin offense was this year, still well on pace for a 1,000-yard season, if not more.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that's not,
yeah,
you know, back in 1978, 1,000 yards, but it still shows that he's still doing, you know, he's still doing what he needed to do, and who knows where that might end up. And I just feel like to get this fourth-round pick for him didn't really make a lot of sense and still doesn't. I would have rather see them hang on to him, and next year in the draft you could probably do something better than that.
Well, here's the bottom line. This is the guy who replaced Lamar Miller, right? They couldn't wait to get Lamar Miller out of town. They didn't even offer him a contract, right? So this is my whole argument about this whole organization. What Mike Tannenbaum does, he never fixes an issue. He creates more problems and then doesn't solve them and creates a problem where one doesn't exist. And it balloons. You know, you had a good – you had Lamar Miller, who you drafted. He's becoming a good ball player. Got to get rid of him. Now you get Ajayi to replace him. He becomes an okay ball player. He's in a Pro Bowl last year. Then you just dump him, and now you're down to two guys who probably wouldn't start on any other team.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of
sense. We created a running back issue now. This is the Mike Tannenbaum way to build a team. You know what? He never can build a team. It's not a winner. Never gonna. He has no idea what he's doing. This guy is so over his head in this position, it's ridiculous. And this organization's a mess. It's really never – and I don't see anything changing anytime soon. You know? Everybody thinks that Tannehill comes back next year and everything's going to be okay. God only knows what they're going to do with that, too. You know? There's no guarantee they're bringing Tannehill back. God only knows what direction they may go in.
Well, that would be a real cluster, if you will. And you know, you get the feeling that the agenda is certainly different than what most fans' agenda is for this team, and you're looking to, you know, win ball games, and moves like this don't really show that. And he had made that comment a while ago, which I still can't get over. I'm talking about Mike Tannenbaum. He made a comment about how you groom people, and you know, and then they graduate and they go on, and I've never heard anybody say that.
Yeah, they get paid by other teams, and other people pay them. You know, you can't keep everybody, and you graduate them, and they get paid by other teams. Oh, that's what Bill Walsh used to do, right?
Yeah, what Bill Walsh used to do and what top teams do is they get rid of their players right before they're washed up. So they're basically
right.
they jump the gun in getting rid of some players that may still have a year left, 2 years left at high quality, but not the 3 or 4, and you know basically do that as opposed to this scenario where you're getting rid of guys that are just on the verge of becoming superstars and contributing, you know, to you winning big time ball games and getting rid of them then, which is a big, big difference, and it's something I've never heard a GM say. I really haven't. I've never heard that come out of a GM's mouth. It's crazy to me, you know. And we've seen it. We've seen it because you see these guys that go on to different teams and have such success.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. And you know, so I say, you know, what is the game plan? What is the agenda? And why, you know, why is it that these moves don't seem to help the team other than financially, which seems to be the common denominator.
And what's their big news after the trade last week? That they're raising season ticket prices for next year.
Yep. Yep. That they come out and they raised season ticket prices, like you said. And now, that's why this fan base seems to be getting really just so aggravated. And you know, it seems like we've always mentioned that there is a separation between fans and the front office, and they're treated like elitist, the front office, you know? And it just goes on to show more and more.
Dude, there's no question. They could care less. They don't make any moves to satisfy. And look, you can't make moves satisfying the fan base, but you can't throw mud at them either. And that's what this team does, you know? This team treats the fans like crap. You know, it's bad enough you took a home game away from them this year. You know, season ticket holders that you can't wait to run to London at every turn, right? And then next year you're raising ticket prices. Well, maybe if you didn't run to London every year, maybe you wouldn't have to raise ticket prices. You'd have your eighth game of revenue. But you're certainly not hosting a home playoff game anytime soon.
No, and that's the frustrating point is that, and I've kind of sensed how this was catching up with this team. Their record, as I said, did not dictate really who they were, and now it's evening out. And now you're on the verge of this.
We're not stupid. We know what we were watching. You know, come on.
Yeah.
You know, you're 4-3, and you lose three games. Two, you got shut out, and the third one, you really did get shut out. You threw a garbage touchdown as time expired. You know.
When you say time expired, you literally mean. Yeah, you literally mean with a couple seconds on the clock is zero when
it was
caught.
No seconds. It was double zero
time.
When he caught the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, there was no time left.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. So when you look at something like that, we did see this coming. And then obviously there was a game last night, which we're going to get into now, and it's running back by committee because of the Ajayi trade. So let's take a quick break. We'll come on back, and we'll discuss the 27-24 loss by the Miami Dolphins to the Oakland Raiders.
Hi, this is John Alford, all number 56, the old Miami Dolphin linebacker. You're listening to the Pat Catello Show.
You're listening to the Miami Dolphins Legend Show, sponsored by Iberia Tiles, with locations from Georgia to South Florida. Iberia Tiles offers over 3,000 products and complete peace of mind. From tiles, mosaic, and stone to wood flooring, Iberia has a solution no matter what the size of your project. Visit iberiatiles.com, that's I-B-E-R-I-A, and ask for Dave or call direct at 404-409-0746. And fanatics.com, if you love the Miami Dolphins, then you need to visit fanatics.com. Once again, that's Finn, P-H-I-N. And now back to your Miami Dolphins Legends Show with your host, Pat Catello.
guys, welcome back to the Miami Dolphins Legends Show. I'm your host, Pat Catello, joined alongside Rich Van Zant. And we are broadcasting live, reviewing the Miami Dolphins' loss to the Oakland Raiders 27-24 last night. Just a reminder, you can catch us on iTunes. So go on iTunes, search Pat Catello Show, and you can get our show right to your phone every Monday night, so you get the live version, and you can also archive it and get back shows as well. And then you can send us any questions, comments, or what have you, patcatelloshow@yahoo.com. Rich, you know, the Miami Dolphins last night, they really faced a game which could have, you know, could have changed their season pretty good. Jay Cutler unarguably had his best game of the year. Like I said, 34 for 42, 311 yards and three touchdowns. So looking at it on paper, I mean, the guy had an excellent game. I also watched him and the way he was with Adam Gase after that game. And now what became completely evident to me, and I should have seen this even earlier, but what became completely evident is the relationship that he has is much greater than I even thought. It almost seems like Cutler is the man, not above him, but certainly that he respects the most. And I think that he asked a favor for him to come out of retirement, and that favor was so big that there, I could see why it was 100% the comment that he was going to be the quarterback. And I think you could take any notion of anything out of that. Of course, Matt Moore laying that gigantic egg in that shutout, eliminated that in Baltimore. But, you know, I can now see how deep that relationship really is.
Yeah, there's definitely a love affair there. There's no question about it. I don't see what the attraction is, to tell you the truth. I mean, look, you can't argue for Matt Moore anymore because of what he did in Baltimore. I mean, that's a mute cause. That's, you know, everybody's got to be off that bandwagon because he really, you know, he stunk it up, and there's no excuse for that. You know, Cutler really didn't do anything for what we got shut out again in the first quarter, right? Scored a little bit in the second. You know, still came off slow, throwing a lot of safe passes. Yeah, he did play well, but nothing that's going to excite you.
No, nothing that's going to excite you. It was certainly a game, though, that you can't really blame him on. And when you watch,
what you blame it on is the funky penalties. Every time they had a chance to, you know, take the lead or get back in the game, they shot themselves in the foot. They get the onside kick, they go backwards. They get the turnover, they go backwards. So, you know, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
Yeah, that's true. There's no doubt about that. And one of the major points that aggravated me to no end was at the end of the half, when the Raiders had completed that pass. I never seen anything like it. It was basically 1 second on the clock when he caught the pass, and the clock didn't run. And they called a timeout, but it wasn't like the clock ran out, and then they said, put 1 second back on the clock. The clock just stopped while he was there. And I never seen anything like that. The clock always runs. And whether or not you got to review it and put a time back, I never seen anything like that. And that 3 points at the end of that half, boy, did that really come back to haunt us in a big way.
There's no question. I mean, what, they have 37 seconds left? And one timeout, and we just let them go right down our throat that.
It's
you know, that's when that defense so disgusts me, you know?
Me too. They do some certain things statistically. They might look well, but when you really need to count on them for something, they don't. And let's not forget, the last 2 weeks, the Ravens game and this game, they were ran all over by physical running backs.
Oh, yeah.
All over. Right up the middle. I mean, all over. Marshawn Lynch looked like Marshawn Lynch from Super Bowl Marshawn Lynch.
That long touchdown up the middle. No one put a hand on him.
That was terrible. I mean, they just could not stop anybody when they needed to stop anybody. And that just really, like you said,
drive, right? How many third downs and long did they convert on that? We stopped them first, second. It's like third and 12, first down, right?
Seemed like everyone.
Stopped first, second,
like,
third and 8, first down. It was like it chewed up, almost 7 minutes of the first quarter because they were using every down to get a first down. But they had no problem converting on third.
Yeah, I know. It seemed literally like every one they were doing that. And, you know, running back by committee. So now you had Damian Williams, who I thought looked very good. You know, he did. He looked good. But I think he's a good ball player. You know, but you know, then you had Drake, who obviously, you know, you were saying earlier, had fumbling problems, and sure enough, coughs the ball up at a huge opportunity, huge play in the game.
Terrible. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I don't know how they brag about how fast Drake is, but it just, you know, he had, what, one good run, I guess, right? Didn't he have, like, a 30-yard run or something?
Yeah. He did.
But just, he doesn't look to me like he's a starter.
No, he looks to me like you have the third down back and the backup running back making up your backfield now. That's what it looks like to me. You know, Damian Williams, I like him a lot. Like you've said earlier, the guy's got a knack. There's something special about that guy, especially when he gets near the end zone. But that's what he is. Like, he's a third down back. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's not the guy that's going to line up every down back there and push for yardage. And Drake, you know, seems like he's the guy that is the backup to that. And he can do some good things, but, you know, I don't know. This is the first game you've seen those two. Are they going to be able to continue that on through the whole year? I don't know. I mean, Devontae Parker comes back healthy. He shows some sign. Made a phenomenal catch. Let's not forget that. Made one
that
of the best catches
catch.
Of the year.
And, of course,
guy's got talent.
He did not a catch.
Yeah.
The ref right there rules is not a catch. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? What's the matter with these guys?
Officiating-wise, was really a rough game.
Terrible.
There was penalties, like you said, that's really had a big decisive effect on the game.
Well, I think that wasn't that Parker that was getting bear hugged before the ball got to him?
Yeah, no
call
on that. That was a terrible non-call. It really was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
isn't it amazing,
non-call.
Like, when Collinsworth is doing a game, if it doesn't fit his agenda, he doesn't even mention it.
Yeah.
If it doesn't fit, like, the last four sentences he says, and there's a penalty, he just, like, lets it go. You know, obviously that was a penalty.
Neither one of them talked about that. He was clearly hit early, and clearly a flag should have been thrown there, and it wasn't, you know. So, you know, obviously it went all different directions. It went first off where there was, you know, some non-calls, but then it also went where the Miami Dolphins themselves really had some terrible penalties at bad moments. And
awful penalties, and then when James went down, I don't know how bad he is, that guy that came in for him, oh boy, that was freaking painful to watch. You know, that's when Khalil Mack woke up.
Yeah. Hey, you're right. And you know what? I must say, Parkey's done some really good things, but I'm getting tired of the missed extra points.
Oh, it's getting lame. It really is getting lame.
They're big. I mean, a missed extra point does a lot. It does a real lot because it stops momentum, right? The psyche.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Look, you know, it didn't really make a difference yesterday because we got the two-point conversion and we never really had a chance to tie the game anyway. But, you know, most of the time you need that two-point conversion. Our team's not getting it. You know and I know it.
Yeah, and then unfortunately...
And if it wasn't
for
Sano throwing Williams into the end zone, I don't think he makes it either.
Yeah. But unfortunately, too little too late, and, you know, that wasn't going to be enough. You know, you had to get the ball back, and you know, you already got your one onsides, and you know, for a guy to get the onsides, that last onside was terrible. Ooh.
Oh, it was awful, awful.
What a terrible onsides kick!
And you're
really you
can't right to Amari Cooper.
it was just as bad as it gets. I mean, the ball came right up. I mean, it was like a perfect hop to the second baseman. It was terrible.
Ridiculous.
It's a tough game to lose because, first of all, it's a team that we play.
That isn't good.
Listen, the book's out on that. We don't know. They were a good team last year. They've been struggling this year. But, you know, a team like that is good. It just hasn't been coming together. And they beat the Chiefs. So, you know, they came back and they beat the Chiefs. So you don't know. So I'm not going to look at their record and say they're not good because they were good last year. I think they're a good team that's been struggling. But the bottom line is it's a team that we have been playing for decades, and we just always seem to come up short in big games. But this is a game you felt like they should have won. I did anyway. I felt like it was a game that they not only should have won, but they had so many opportunities to win.
Yeah, they did, but, you know, good teams win, bad teams lose, and I think we have a bad team. You know, I'm still not thrilled with our offense. I think our play calls are – what the hell? When you're down by what? What are you down by? Two-plus touchdowns, and it's third and 22, and you run the ball up the middle?
I can't explain that.
Come on. What is that?
That made no sense to me then. It makes no sense to me now. Really?
Hey, you only get 10 or 12 yards. Isn't it better to punt from forward than backwards? How do you just give up on us on that?
I don't know why they made
that
call.
That makes no sense.
It baffled me. It really did. Baffled me.
And what did I tell you was
going to
be the first play of the game when, after they traded a Johnny?
Yeah, I know. Right, I know. Right up the middle, no gain.
Yep.
I know.
Damian Williams up the middle, no gain. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It really is.
Yeah. They're very predictable. And now 6-2 New England Patriots, 5-3 Buffalo Bills, 4-4 Miami Dolphins, 4-5 New York Jets. I mean,
so we're hanging on to third place by our fingernails, huh?
You're hanging
wonderful?
On to it, but you know who's in the rear view mirror. I mean, this could go a bunch of different directions. You got the Carolina Panthers, Monday Night Football next week. And,
yep.
You know, there's no room for error here because you're going to go back to a losing record if you don't win this game. And Carolina
yep.
Panthers are, you know, they're playing decent football. I mean, they're not the Carolina Panthers that, you know, that went to the Super Bowl, obviously, but they're the Carolina Panthers that now are on a two-game winning streak, I believe. And, you know, they're 6-3. They're a better team than us.
There's no question. And it's, you know, it's in a hostile environment, you know.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No, it's not good because, you know, the ship was sinking and you thought that they might be able to turn it around. And now they're at the point where if they don't get a hold on this and get a hold on this mighty quickly, this could get really ugly.
Well, I don't know why you're worried. I mean, we have Ted Larson and McDonald, and who's the other guy, Tannenbaum, said was coming back?
Well, you know, for the people that don't understand that, he had made a comment after all this was going on. He made a comment, which just goes to show he sees this team very differently than we see it, or the fans see it. And we had basically saviors coming, and everything was going to be all right. And the people that you just named, who most people don't even know who they are, was the reason why. And
Devontae Parker was the third one. I'm sorry.
And as these guys are coming in, the Seattle Seahawks are making a trade for a veteran offensive tackle that may propel them now, you know, as a Super Bowl contender. So the point is, there was offensive linemen out there. You could make things happen. Doesn't seem like they're making moves to improve the team. Seems like they're making moves to cut salary, to make points, to get points across. Do you need to trade Jay Ajayi to get your point across? Last year, Gase cut guys, and then on the offensive line, and, you know,
you
I
know,
mean, is that what
I
we
always
feel
like you make examples with borderline players, not with
right?
your Pro Bowl players.
Right?
You know?
I agree. I mean, Jimmy Johnson
well,
certainly.
Good teams do that. That's. I'm sorry. I'm talking over my head here. Good teams do that. They make examples
yeah.
with the bottom of the roster, not the top of the roster.
Yeah, it's very frustrating because it doesn't seem to be run like a team that's trying to be successful on the field. It seems like it's more interested, like we've said time and time again, for different issues, you know, basically for hosting Super Bowls and you know, for all the nonsensical stuff, the money-making
well,
things.
Well, you saw, you know, what's that old quote, a picture's worth a thousand words?
Yeah.
You know that quote, right?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
saw when they showed Russ and Tannenbaum in the booth yesterday? That's worth
yeah.
a thousand words.
you
know,
and
I know
that,
it. You know, there's one thing those two guys aren't doing anytime soon, ever. They're never going to hold the Vince Lombardi trophy unless they climb up on the shelf in Davie and touch one from 72 or 73. That's the closest they're ever going to get.
They would disagree with you, but I understand what you're saying. You know, I think Adam Gase is a big question mark now. I mean, I think last year people have bought into this, and a lot of people were really feeling strong on this, you know, and now I think there's a lot of people that are giving second thoughts. You've seen
I never bought into it. I never saw any difference between his offense and the Philbin offense. And this year it got worse.
So at no time did you ever feel like Adam Gase is the guy that's going to really bring
really.
This team where
I didn't see how they ever thought he was an offensive guru. I never saw anything different. It was the same predictable, boring offense that I saw for the last 3 years.
Well, okay, but, you know, the way that they were playing, you know, shown that. But when they first came in and all the people that were, you know, raving about it, different story or no?
No, I don't think so. And I didn't understand what he did that was so great in Chicago. They keep, like, raving about and then he got Jay Cutler to play so great, and Jay Cutler was 6-10 that year. I didn't think Jay Cutler played great that year, and, you know, Tannehill was 6-10 that year also, so what made his 6-10 so much better than Tannehill's 6-10? I never understood what the raving was all about.
Yeah, which is the thing, like, that we had said doesn't make a lot of sense, is that what was the difference between their 6-10 season and you know, basically our 6-10 season. You know, the way
nothing.
That they raved about that. Coach of the year, Cutler's best season. I don't know. Just didn't seem like anything
Cutler's
was
best
that
season,
great.
Right? It was all of a sudden going, Cutler, right? And I never heard one analysis go, boy, to beat the Bears today, they're going to have to stop Jay Cutler. I never heard any of that.
Yeah, I mean, not only do I hear that as far as his best season, I still hear it. You know, like, I mean, that's all you hear is that he had his best season.
Because when you repeat a myth long enough, people start believing the myth.
Yeah. Very frustrating. Very frustrating, to say the least. I don't know where this team's going. And, you know, when the home field advantage, home field advantage non-existent and has been for how many years now?
No.
I can't even remember.
A ton of Raiders fans there yesterday. Yeah, well, keep sticking it to everybody, guys. You know, keep raising the ticket prices and keep making it more and more miserable with the product you put on the field. What do you expect? How many times are you going to fool the same people?
It's true. All right, we'll be right back after this.
This is Don Nottingham, former Miami Dolphin. You're listening to Pat Catello's Miami Dolphin Legend Show.
You're listening to the Miami Dolphins Legend Show, sponsored by Iberia Tiles, with locations from Georgia to South Florida. Iberia Tiles offers over 3,000 products and complete peace of mind. From tiles, molestics, and stone to wood flooring, Iberia has the solution no matter what the size of your project. Visit IberiaTiles.com. That's IBERIA. And ask for Dave or call direct at 404-409-0746. And Fanatics.com. If you love the Miami Dolphins, then you need to visit Fanatics.com. Once again, that's Finn, P-H-I-N. And now back to your Miami Dolphins Legends Show with your host, Pat Catello.
Jump down tonight. 9:30 on a Tuesday, just to check out the late night record shop. Call it imposing, call it composing, call it insane. When I'm through, that I just can't stop. It's a matter of instincts, a matter of conditioning, and a matter of fun. You can go and Pablo. Dog. Ring a bell and I'll salivate. How'd you like this? Dr. Landy, tell me, and I'm just a better girl. Cause right now I'm lying in bed, just
Back to the Miami Dolphins Legends Show. Pat Catello, Rich Van Zandt, as we come to the home stretch. Miami Dolphins at 4-4, facing the Carolina Panthers Monday night. Try to get back into the winning column for the season. It's going to be a tough call. Obviously, they are the underdogs, and so we'll see how this all shapes out. There's a lot of questions on this Miami Dolphins team, and a lot of them that I don't seem to find the answers to, because I'm not really sure. And I know that, you know, we've had a lot of people that, you know, feel the same way. Rich, if Ryan Tannehill was the quarterback opening day, what's the record of this team right now?
I think they probably could have beaten the Jets the game up here. For sure. And trying to think. I mean, yeah, he probably could have won yesterday. They probably could have two more wins.
So you say, well, you know, it's a little strange because if that's the case, the Miami Dolphins would be a first-place team right now. But more so than that, I guess, okay, you give them 6-2. But here's the question, though. Would they still be shut out two times like that, 2.5, 2.75, or whatever you want to call it? You're giving them the game against the Jets as a win, so obviously you're not giving that as the shutout game. But would this team have reached those
it's weird to say they could beat it. You know, a team that they got shut out 20-0, basically, because the Jets didn't get they didn't get shut out there. But
yeah.
You know how close that game was at halftime. I mean,
yeah.
we could have been blowing them out, for crying out loud.
Sure.
We didn't cross the 50-yard line. You know, the Jets didn't do anything, really. They didn't put that game out of reach until late third quarter.
Yeah.
So I think with Tannehill in that game, I mean, Cutler was so inept that game that I think with Tannehill playing, I think they could have won that game.
Yeah. It's interesting. Obviously, it's a question that we're never going to have the answer to, but
yeah, no.
It's just something that, you know, that you think about. And And I don't know. I mean, I think, if anything, I think we see that how important and how underrated Ryan Tannehill is, you know, and what a really good quarterback he is at times. And you're really noticing how much the Dolphins do miss him in a lot of circumstances. But to say that that's the answer of why they haven't been able to.
There's plenty of other issues on this team. I mean, I know you love Kiko Alonso, but, I mean, he was exposed hard yesterday. He can't cover tight ends. I mean, he was awful on the first three drives. He was awful.
Yeah, but that's not on him, though, because that's not really the matchup. They found those matchups, and you know, obviously they're going to exploit him.
But he's not capable of doing that. That's what, how he gets exposed. You know,
but
that's what makes him not a great player.
When you say love, what I love about Kiko Alonso is he's the hardest hitter on the team, and he gives 110% every play, every game the guy plays. And I don't know how you can ask for more than that from the guy. I mean, he's the heart and soul of the defense, and it's certainly not his fault when that defense falters so as many times as it does, you know? And yes, I see the mismatches, and I certainly seen the tight end who he made look
and
like Tony Gonzalez.
He's a king
sometimes
of missed tackles. Look, he's not, you know, he is what he is. He's not that good, you know. Yes, he plays
hard. I
disagree.
He's not great, but I disagree that he's not that good. I think he's a very good linebacker. He's not great, but I think he's a very good linebacker. I don't think that's your problem, and I think the problem is that you get mismatches.
They're going to find a way to expose him. They always are.
Well, you're going to have, obviously, I blame that more on the defense for putting those situations on there, because most middle linebackers are going to have a hard time with a tight end like that going across. I mean, they're going to have a tough time. Gronkowski is going to eat you alive. I don't care who you are, you know? I mean, you just are. Middle linebackers in coverage are going to have hard times if you don't have support, you know? And that they really, they it seems like they don't put themselves in good situations.
Yeah,
and I see problems in that secondary that bother me even more. And let's face it, Jones has been getting beat a lot. And I love Jones, but he's been getting beat.
He hasn't been playing well the last few weeks. He really hasn't been.
Now, is he getting exposed? Are they just putting him? Because, you know, listen, he's great when he can come, when somebody's covering somebody, and then he can come and pop somebody, right? I mean, that's what he is. When you start putting him in coverage, whether or not it's because somebody misses an assignment, I mean, you've seen that touchdown there. I mean, that's not what he does. Seems like these guys are finding themselves in situations that they're not really designed to be in. And when you have that, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, and you know, our pass rush was non-existent, other than
isn't it always though? I mean, I know you have your moments when Wake gets three sacks in a row. I got that, but in the most times, isn't it always non-existent, especially when you need it to be there? I mean, that defensive line is one of the highest paid, talked about lines, but it just never seems to get the pass rush when you need to have the pass rush. And I heard a million excuses about it, the footing, the this, the that. But I don't know, man. I see quarterbacks, they sit back there. Like you see, I mean, David Carr, literally.
Derek.
Derek Carr, literally. He could have sat there for another minute and a half when he was throwing that ball away. Like there was nobody coming near him.
And he gets the ball, rid of the ball quick, and he was just didn't even have to try to do that. He had all the time in the world. Yeah.
I mean, that offensive line had a cocoon around him.
Yeah.
That's frustrating. That's very frustrating to me, especially when you have the people that, you know, they rave about on this line that are supposed to, you know, be so strong. That was 2 years ago. I mean, that's all anybody talked about, right? How could anybody stop this defensive line? Well, obviously they got the memo and learned how to do it in a hurry. Because from the get-go, it just hasn't been the
dominating
line.
Well, it's another problem that was created. Couldn't wait to let Olivier Vernon leave town, and we haven't had another side rusher since him. You know, the other guys are terrible. So it's another problem that was created. A good team not going to lock him up? I mean, obviously, he wouldn't have got $80 million from us, but he never would have had the opportunity to get that. If you lock him up before he's a free agent,
you're doing the same thing again with Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, and with Landry, the problem is, you know, if you franchise him, they're not going to pay him $17 million a year.
No,
so they're going to let him test the free agent waters, and he's going to walk. You know, because at this point, why negotiate now? What's the difference? He's not going to get anything more at this point. He's not getting paid for this year earlier, which was promised. And they betrayed him, too. They promised they would do it, and they didn't do it. So, you know, he's picked off, rightfully so. I'm sure he's not happy about how many catches he's getting.
No, he's happier than he was week 1, 2, 3, but no, he's not happy. He's right now absolutely. I think he's starting to think about other teams. I think that's why he hasn't gotten involved in any of the national anthem stuff. He doesn't want to burn any bridges. I really think Jarvis Landry knows that he's most likely going to another team next year.
Well, hey, let's touch on that, too. You know the story with that yesterday, too, right?
Well, this is what I had heard. My contacts told me that, and I think they addressed it on the thing, that the rule was set where they weren't allowed to do that. They came up with something that, hey, it breaks up our pregame ritual. Can we please be there and do it? And then Gase was the one who gave them the okay?
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Let me tell you something. If they're all standing for the national anthem, right, and you have to go into the tunnel, how's that breaking your pregame ritual?
Yeah. I don't know. No, I got no answer.
That is the lamest excuse I ever heard in my life. And I got to be honest with you. For somebody who's supposed to be no-nonsense like Gase, you cave in for that? Really? Really? You have veterans on the field yesterday. You're honoring Memorial Day. All the NFL's wearing the salute the military, you know, stuff that they sell. Let's not be honest. Let's see that the NFL loves the military so much. They're making money off of it.
Veterans Day?
Yeah, that's why they were all wearing salute to service outfits yesterday, the hat, all the clothes and everything. Yeah, it's Veterans Day Saturday.
Okay. So this was the Veterans Day thing. Okay.
So, yeah. So they had all the veterans on the field with the big flag, and they had, you know, hundreds of veterans on the field and service members on the field. And these
right.
three clowns are kneeling. I mean, you know, I mean, look, whatever your cause is, that's not the way to frickin' protest it. It really isn't. It's disrespectful. It's juvenile. And you probably, the three of them probably can't come up with a valid reason that matches up with the other two of why they're doing it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the frustrating point, is that it doesn't seem to be a defined reason of the protests. It seems like it's a little bit all over the board. I've heard many things from anti-Trump to Black Lives Matter to, you know, to now the, you know, just the NFL owners. I mean, I've heard it all
yeah.
over. So
every week it's something new. Yeah, I know. It's
yeah.
a joke. It really is. And, you know, all
yeah.
you're doing is you're teeing off your fan base, because the majority of the fan base doesn't agree with any of this. And that's why they don't show the national anthem live. Is because, you know, they don't want – the TV doesn't want the flack. And the NFL is really – you know, they're killing the golden goose, because they're
yeah.
really teeing off a lot of the fan base with this.
And from what I've heard, their ratings and their revenue has really dropped significantly
yeah.
this year. So it's not just a fabricated thing. There's definitely some truth to this and why they're struggling like they are in a lot of different areas, the NFL. And I think that's why they had, you know, the meetings and that, because it is starting to hit home a little bit. And home is obviously in the pocketbook with the NFL. Like, that's what matters, right?
Yep. That's all that matters, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what seems to... Yeah, pretty much get everybody's attention, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating that the Miami Dolphins always seem to be in the at the head of everything negative that comes.
Yeah, they don't make up the controversy, but they run with it. They
every
always have to be involved
like
in somehow.
Yeah,
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, you know, like I said, and it just seems like the same thing each week, but. 4-4. This is the key game here. You're at the crossroads. You're going to go to Carolina, Cam Newton. If you don't get the win here, you're going to fall below 500. You're already losing respect at an absolute high-paced level. You need a victory here to rein it in, stay in a winning record, stay competitive, stay playoff competitive. I mean, you basically have to win 6 of your next 8 games to be playoffs. That's what it is. I mean, you can say whatever you want. You need to win 6 of your next 8 games to be a playoff contending team. And, you know,
that's it.
That's not even a guarantee. It's not even a guarantee, because there's a lot of teams that seem to be bunched up with the same kind of record. But, you know, you have to win 6 of your last 8. They've done it, you know, they've done it before, but this team seems a little different. They don't seem like they're getting things in sync, and that's why I say that. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it.
I don't see it happening. I really don't. I didn't see it happening last year, but I really don't see it happening.
No, I was
going to
say, but you never do, so, you know, take that for what it's worth. I'm not saying that you're always wrong, because you're not, but you never see it, and, you know, obviously they did it last year. You didn't see that coming. I just think this is a different team, though, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm hoping that they really get it together.
The way I look at it, too, is they played like crap so far. You know, they're 4-4. But this is the weaker part of the schedule. They haven't played the most. And we got the Patriots twice still. We got the Bills twice still. You know?
Yeah.
So half of the games are division games of two teams we don't play well against.
There's no gimmies anymore. Actually, I'm going to tell you this is how it is. You're going to have the Panthers Monday night. Then you got the Buccaneers in that makeup game. Then you got the Patriots. Then you got the Broncos, and then the Patriots again. So, like you said, 2 out of 3 weeks Patriots. Then you're at the Bills, at the Chiefs, and then home for the Bills. So, there's no easy games there. And let me tell you something. If you could win 6 of these 8 games that I just named, that's a feat, man. You're really doing something. If you could do that. And so far, I haven't seen anything in this team that leads me to believe that they can do that.
Ditto. I don't see how.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to basically be where it stands. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week on the Miami Dolphins Legend Show, and hopefully we'll have some much better news to report.
Took a look down a westbound road, right away I made my choice. Headed out to my big two-wheeler, I was tired of my own voice. Took a beat on the northern plains and just rolled that power on. Well, I was out of Mackinac City, stopped in a